Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here is Bob.
We're in Luke 23 today, which is the trial before Pilate and the crucifixion. The Jews, although they had condemned Jesus for blasphemy of claiming to be God, and that's important they understood he was doing that, and that's exactly what he was doing, brought him to Pilate with three other accusations that were all lies from their previous attempts to trick him in the temple. Now here they are in verse 2. Corrupting our nation, forbidding to pay taxes to Caesar, and claiming to be a king himself. Now that second one is Luke 20, 19 through 26. And the third one is Luke 19, 29 through 40. And these are the charges they knew would get the Roman officials' ears. Okay? Now, and Pilate asked him, "Are you a king of the Jews?" And he said to himself, "Yes, I am." Well, a little bit better idiom is, "You say." It's an idiom affirmation, but with some qualifications. Probably he's saying, "Yes, I am, but the way you're saying it, I'm not in a political sense. I am the king, but I'm in a spiritual sense." And that seems to be what he's saying. You might want to see Matthew 26, 25, John 18, 36, and 37. Okay? Let me continue then. Then Pilate said to the high priest and crowds, "I do not find anything blameworthy in this man." Now, it is amazing to me that Luke, who is writing to Gentiles, was trying to show that Christianity was not a treason against the Roman officials. And even in the mouth of Pilate, he kept saying over and over again, "This man's not guilty. This man's not guilty." Look at it. Verse 14, verse 15, verse 22, John 18, 38, John 19, 4 and 6. This is a witness that though Rome killed him, Rome knew he was innocent. And that's an important testimony. It was the Jewish leaders, okay? But they continued emphatically insisting, "He is exciting the people by teaching all over Judea. And he started in Galilee and now he is here." Well, Galilee was a hotbed of resurrection sentiment. Many of the revolutionaries and zealots had come out of Galilee. They said that to try to be another nail in his coffin. But old Pilate wanted a way out. He took that immediately and said, "Oh, well, Herod is here in town, and that's his jurisdiction. Take him to Herod." So Pilate used what they thought was going to be further evidence against him as a way to get out. Now, he refers him to Herod. Look at verse 8. "Now, Herod was very glad to see Jesus." Why? Well, Herod thought that Jesus was John the Baptist reincarnate. You might want to see Matthew 14, 1 and 2, Luke 9, 9. He wanted to see Jesus do a little trick, a little magic, a little miracle for him, okay? Herod's the only one that Jesus will not speak to. Jesus spoke very positively of who he was to the high priest in the Sanhedrin, and he even speaks pretty positively to Pilate. He didn't say a word to Herod. Now, the reason this whole episode about Herod, look at verse 12. This is unique to Luke. "So Herod and Pilate became personal friends that very day. They had been at enmity before." We know nothing about that. No, don't know what it was about, but this is unique to Luke. How did Luke know so much about Herod? Well, if you notice the book of Acts, chapter 13, 1, there's a man named Manian who grew up as a court friend of Herod's, and Luke knew him. I bet Luke got most of his eyewitness account from this Manian who Herod talked to and heard the scuttlebutt around the palace about Jesus and John the Baptist. Boy, Luke was an accurate recorder of historical events. Now, notice if you would, "Then Pilate called a meeting of the high priest and the leaders and the council of the people and said to them, 'You brought me this man on a charge of turning the people from allegiance. And here in your presence I've examined him and do not find him guilty of the charges you make against him. Nor does Herod.'" There's two more that say he's innocent, Herod and Pilate. "For he has sent him back to me. Indeed, he has done nothing to deserve the death penalty, so I will flog him and let him go." Now, from the other Gospels, Herod's flogging Jesus was an attempt to get sympathy from the crowd. Now, flogging was a terrible punishment. We learn from other sources that this was not the kind of flogging that happened before you're crucified. Now, that was a brutal beating. But that sometimes when a man was brought before the court and was dismissed, to kind of for good behavior, to keep him kind of straight and causing so much trouble to all the officials, they would beat him lightly. Now, this seems to be a reference for a light beating, okay? Not the severe one connected with crucifixion. Now, verse 17 is left out of my manuscript. This is William's translation. It's in Aleph, but it's not in A and B, okay? Some think it's in Matthew 27:15, Mark 15:6, John 18:39. So, some think it was included here by accident. You might want to, we talked last week about textual criticism. What we want is not to take away from the Bible. What we want is the true Bible. We want what Luke wrote. That's all we want. That's the bottom line. We want what these inspired authors wrote. And sometimes it is so hard to know. It is so hard to know. But they all together begin to shout, "Away with this fellow, and let us have Barabbas." Now, this Barabbas deal, it was a tradition that at the Passover they released a prisoner. Rome did. Let me give you a couple examples. Mark 15:6, John 18:39, Matthew 27:15. But the guy they're going to release is guilty of the very crime that Jesus is charged with. Now, isn't that ironical? Now, Pilate's going to try to release him, but they're going to threaten Pilate. They're going to say, "I'm going to report you to Rome if you don't do what we want." That's John 19:12. So Pilate got intimidated. Now, I have a little series of things here I put together of why. How did Pilate make his decision? What was going on in Pilate's mind that though he knew Jesus was guilty, I mean innocent, was willing to make him guilty? What were some of the factors? Well, number one, he recognized Jesus' innocence and the power of his personality. Number two, he knew the Sanhedrin was trying to manipulate him. Number three, his wife had warned him about that Jesus was a righteous man, Matthew 27:19-20. The mob was, you know, seen during a feast day, he was nervous about a riot occurring. And that's in Luke 23:18. And Pilate was plumb superstitious himself, which is obvious from John 19:7-8. When they called Jesus the Son of God, he took him back in and said, "Who are you now?" So all this is going through Pilate's mind. We have many references in other historical books about Pilate, a very shrewd, a very cruel, a very domineering man who was finally released from his position because the Jews took criticism of him to the Caesar. Now, notice that Barabbas is let go, and they want to crucify Jesus. A third time, Pilate said, "Why? What has he done? I found nothing in him deserving a death penalty." But Pilate was trying to let him go. They wouldn't have it. Wouldn't have it. So he turned Jesus over to them. This seems to be a fulfillment of Isaiah 53:12. He was delivered up, given over to. All right? Now, verse 26. "Now, as they led him away, they seized a man named Simon from Cyrene." Now, this man apparently became a very famous man of church. He must have been converted this day as he watched Jesus die. We learn that from Mark 15:28, and it seems like his children are mentioned in Romans 16:13. Now, many people say he's a black man. I really don't think he's a black man. I think he was a Jew of the diaspora. For we learn there were many synagogues in Jerusalem for people from Cyrene. Acts 2:10, 6:9, 11:20, 13:1. He was there for the feast days. He was living out in the suburbs and coming into town for the feast days. And they made him carry Jesus' cross. Now, there's been much discussion. Did Jesus have to carry his crossbar or his whole cross? We can't be certain of that. We weren't even certain of the shape of the cross, much less what they had to carry. But this man was made to help Jesus carry the cross. Jesus had been beaten by the Jewish guards, Herod's guards, and Pilate's guards. He was a bloody pulp by this time. And he couldn't carry his own cross. Now, put the cross on his shoulders to carry, and he walked behind Jesus. In front would have been a man with a sign, "King of the Jews." Then would come the soldiers pushing away the crowds in the narrow streets. Then would come Jesus, and behind them, Simon carrying his cross, and more soldiers behind, going to a major crossroads just outside the city, very prominent, on a little hill, right, probably by two roadways, where men were crucified as a deterrent for crime. Now, there was also a vast throng of people. Sure there was. All those pilgrims that flooded in there had heard about it. Now, I don't think they were there when they called Barabbas. That was early in the morning. These pilgrims had probably slept late from being up all night at Passover feast and talking and all that with the families. So they weren't up at 6 a.m. when Pilate had his court. And they weren't up when the crowd started crying, release Barabbas. I think that group of zealots knew they were going to release somebody, and they were there to plan to say, give us Barabbas, irregardless of the Jewish high priest and the deal with Jesus, but they didn't probably know about. It didn't take much to instigate them. But now here comes a whole throng, and women who were beating their breast and lamenting him. Now, these women we know were probably some of his followers, but many of the women of Jerusalem would do this. And they tried to offer drug wine to these people from time to time because they were sorry from being. But Jesus turned to the women and said, "Women of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but continue to weep for yourselves and your children." Even in a moment like this, he cared for these women, trying to give them a prophetic fulfillment of who he was and what was going to happen. Now, verse 29, "For the time is coming." This refers to A.D. 70, the destruction of Jerusalem, or the second coming of Jesus. "When people will say, 'Happy are the women who are childless.'" What irony for a Jew. "And the women who have never born and nursed babies. Then people will begin to say, 'The mountains fall on us.'" You might want to see Hosea 10:8 and Revelation 6:16. "And to the hills, cover us up. For if they do this when the wood is green, what will they do when it's dry?" Now, this seems to be a common proverb for, if they're doing this to me, a righteous man, what's Rome going to do to you when you rebel? Well, I think that's the input of this. "Two other criminals were led out to be executed with him." This is a direct fulfillment, predictive prophecy to the letter of Isaiah 53:9. You might want to see Matthew 27:38. You talk about a supernatural book. Boy, we got one in this predictive prophecy. Such details. "When they reached the place called the Skull." Now, in Latin, it's Calvaria. That's where we get Calvary from. The Aramaic is Golgotha, and the Greek in English is cranial. Now, I don't think it's the shape of a skull with eye sockets like Gardens Calvary. I think it was a low, bald hill where they normally crucified men in a prominent site right as the two roads came and split going into Jerusalem. Okay? Where it is, we don't exactly know. They crucified him there. This deal about how he was done, the nails going in and all the gore and blood, they knew it was a horrible death. But they're not playing on our sympathy about poor Jesus beaten up and nailed to a cross. They're emphasizing he's God's Son, deity, dying for human sin. That's all they say. And they crucified him there. That's all they say. Also the criminals, one on his right and one on his left. Now, we learn from Mark and Matthew they were thieves. That fulfills that prophecy. They drew lots to divide his clothes among them. Now, there's some manuscript problems. This little phrase is omitted in the papyri, Aleph, B, and D. It's in one manuscript of Aleph, A, C, and one manuscript of D. So we're really not sure if it should be there or not. It's just a real divided thing, and I can't decide with those kind of witnesses. They drew lots is fulfillment of Psalms 22:18. "Meanwhile, the people stood on, looking, even the members of the council, the Sanhedrin, were scoffing at him." Oh, look at Psalms 22:6-8. Fulfilled prophecy. "He saved others. Let him save himself now. If he really is the Messiah of God, the chosen one." You see, they wanted him crucified, and only the Romans could do that because there's a curse connected with crucifixion. And it goes back to Deuteronomy 21:23, where it says, "Cursed is everyone who hangs on a tree." And they wanted this man from Galilee cursed by God. That was one of the problems that Paul had with Jesus being the Messiah. How could the Messiah be cursed by God? But thanks be to God, the book of Galatians tells us, he became a curse on our behalf. Friends, there's the good news. He died in our place. Now, so the soldiers made sport of him as they continued to come up and offer him vinegar. Look at Psalm 69:21. Now, I want to do something with you because Jesus would not take the strong drugged wine that the women of Jerusalem offered him in Matthew 27:34 and Mark 15:23. That was a strong drug wine to ease the pain of the crucifixion. But he took vinegar from these soldiers because I think he wanted to speak one last word and his lips were too dry. You might want to see John 19:29. It was a diluted down cheap wine and he took some. "If you are the King of the Jews, save yourself." Yes, there was a placard above his head, "This is the King of the Jews." Now, we learn from John 19:19-21, that Pilate put it there just to goad the Jewish authorities, and he wouldn't change it. It didn't say he said he was. It said King of the Jews in three languages. My goodness. That's from John 19:20. "Now, one of the criminals who was hanging from the cross began to abuse him, saying, you are the Christ, then save yourself and us too. But the other one reproved him. Now, both of them at first insulted him, but this second one had a change of heart. And he kind of says, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Look at verse 43. This solemnly say to you, this very day you'll be with me in paradise. Now, Jesus was going to the grave. He wasn't going to heaven for something like till Pentecost, 50 days, 40 days. I think he was going to Hades or Sheol. Now, the rabbis had Sheol divided into two parts, Hades and Gehenna or Tartarus. I've done a tape on that called Sheol, Hades, Gehenna, and Tartarus. I hope you'll send for our free catalog so you can do these three word studies. Simply to say, this thief went with Jesus to Hades, but later went with him to heaven, I think. Now, it was already about noon, the sixth hour. There's some problems here. Are we using Roman time or Jewish time? John seems to be a little different. It's about noon, okay? Darkness covered the whole country, kind of like the darkness of the plagues in Egypt. So dark you couldn't even see. Was it a thunderstorm? I don't know. Couldn't be an eclipse because it's a full moon. You can't have an eclipse in a full moon. So I don't know what it is. Until 3 o'clock, darkness. I think it's symbolic of God turning his face away from his son. That's why Jesus says, Eloi, Eloi, my God, not Father anymore, when he hung on the cross, dying for our sin. For the sun had failed to shine. We get the English word eclipse here, but it wasn't a true eclipse. And the curtain before the sanctuary was torn in two. Mark 15:38, it was the second veil before the Holy of Holies. Only the priest would have known about that. They must have later told those who were converted. From the top to the bottom, symbolizing the way to God was opened, not by man's effort from the bottom, but God opened the way. It was his initiation. Boy, what beautiful symbolism. Whoa, man, the way is open. All you got to do is walk through it, friend. Got to walk through it. Jesus uttered a loud cry and said, Father, I now commit my spirit to your care. Friends, he was in control the whole time. Hurt, yes. Suffering, yes. Away from the Father, estranged, bearing the sin of the world, yes. But in control. Father, I'm going to die now. And he breathed his last. Maybe a quote from Psalms 31:5. We're just not sure. You know, the Talmud, I missed this, I see it in my notes. The Talmud even said that the doors, the huge wooden doors of the temple, miraculously opened during the crucifixion. Now, some would say it was the earthquake mentioned in the other Gospels. If the doors of the temple opened and the second veil was ripped from top to bottom, it may have been possible that someone could have seen right into that empty of Holy of Holies. Now, there was a front veil. That may have been closed, so I'm not sure that's true, but it's possible. Now, even the Roman captain who had crucified many men, verse 47, he says, he certainly was an innocent man. Now, there are several different translations of this. Matthew and Mark have a son of God, but knowing his polytheistic background, he's not saying he's the Jewish Messiah. Or he didn't understand what he was saying. He just said this was a godly man. Now, Plummer has this. He was a good man, quite right in calling God his father. That may be what this guy was understanding. I don't think this guy's saved here. I don't think he's coming to know the Lord in a personal way. I think he's saying, woo, this was someone different. This was someone special. This was not a normal death. That's what he's saying. And all the crowds who had come together for this sight, when they had seen what took place, returned to the city. But they continued to beat their breast in grief, sign of mourning. But all his acquaintances and the women who used to follow him. I want to tell you, there's a large group of women. Friends, women have always had a significant part in the ministry. I think these women were probably widowers or had some money. Many of us believe the women is who supported the apostolic band. They were always there. The women were there almost every time to see the works and hear the words of Jesus. These are godly, wonderful women. From Galilee in a group were standing at a distance. Now, this deal about burying the body. John is the only gospel that mentions Nicodemus. Here is Joseph Arimathea, who was a member of the Sanhedrin. Apparently, he wasn't invited to that early morning meeting, or they said they couldn't find him because he doesn't express a different opinion, and it says he was not in agreement with that. A town of Arimathea, we're not sure where that is. He was waiting for the kingdom of God. He was kind of a secret disciple, but I want to tell you, he really showed his colors here. How would you like to go and ask the official Roman governor for the body of a person accused of treason? Pilate was surprised Jesus died so early. Now again, you just can't get all this if you just read one gospel. This harmony of the gospels will try to put all the events together. If you just try to read Luke or read Mark or read John, you'll get confused because they're all a little different. This book will help. It kind of puts them in parallel. I'm not saying this is inspired. It's not. But I love and trust this man, and I think it's as good as any. A Harmony of the Gospels by A.T. Robertson. Now, a book like this will do the same thing. The Christ of the Gospels by Shepherd. It will try to put these events in some kind of order for you. Because you just can't read one gospel and get it. Okay? So here we have Joseph, Arimathea. He went to Pilate, asked for the body, took it down from the cross, and wrapped it in a linen sheet. Now, some wonder if it's one sheet. That some of the Gospels imply it's one big sheet. Others imply it's strips of, kind of like Lazarus was embalmed with, where the legs are separate and the arms are separate. But we're just not certain. In a tomb hewn out of rock. Friends, we got predictive prophecy again. Isaiah 53:9, where no one had been laid. Matthew 27:66. Josephus tells it was his tomb. It was Joseph's own tomb. Boy, I tell you what. It's amazing how things that Jesus had no control over that were predicted hundreds of years ago, 750 B.C., are coming to fruition right here. It was the preparation day. Now, that's the day before the high holy Sabbath. Remember, the Jews, following a lunar calendar, and they start with night and go to day because of Genesis 1. So the Passover feast would start at 6 o'clock Friday night. So Jesus died at 3 o'clock Friday. And so there's 3 hours for Joseph to go to Pilate, get some spices, we learned from John with Nicodemus, kind of prepare him, and his tomb was close by, we learned from the other Gospels, and put him in there and seal that before 6 o'clock. 3 hours max. Now, Jesus is in the tomb 3 days. Now, how do you figure that? Any part, be it 1 minute or 30 minutes or 2 hours of that day before 6 p.m. on Friday is considered one full day. All of the high holy Sabbath, 6 p.m. Friday to 6 p.m. Saturday. And then from 6 p.m. Saturday to sometime Sunday morning, we got about 36 to 40 hours. That's how long Jesus was in Hades. I think he really died, really experienced the lostness of men, sent to the realm of the dead to preach, and then to bust those doors wide open when he came back out. Now, preparation day, and the Sabbath was just beginning, 6 p.m. Friday. So the women who had come with Jesus from Galilee, you might see 24:10, they knew that, first of all, you couldn't buy things that late. Okay, it's a feast of a week, it's getting ready for the Sabbath. Couldn't buy things. They didn't think that Joseph and Nicodemus did a good enough job in wrapping that body right. There's some votive candles that should have been put there. They didn't have those. Maybe the wraps weren't done exactly where they thought they should. So they're going to know where that tomb is because they're coming back. The first chance they get, first light, Sunday morning, friends, those ladies are coming to do what they think's right with the body of Jesus. Followed closely. And Joseph, and saw the tomb and how his body was laid there. And they went back home and prepared spices and perfumes. They were going to go back and do it right, according to Jewish tradition. Now, we can't fit all these things in. But it is obvious the impact this had. That city bulging with pilgrims, many of them believed Jesus was the Christ, died. They couldn't understand it. They said, we thought he was the one. He raised others from the dead. He cured the sick. He calmed the storm. And yet they killed him. But see, you got to see the big picture. That's what we get so tunnel vision sometimes. We think our problems are so bad. We got to see the big picture. Jesus came to give his life a ransom for many. Jesus came to die. I know it was a cruel, brutal, unfair thing. But the physical thing that happened is nothing to compare to the spiritual thing that happened. Friends, our sin was dealt with in the sinless death of Christ. It was predicted in detail. Genesis 3:15. Psalms 22. Isaiah 53. If you don't believe a supernatural Bible, after reading those things written hundreds of years before, and then reading the life of Jesus, how they came to fruition, every one of them. The other prophecies about where he was going to be born, Micah 5:2, his ministry in Galilee, Isaiah 9 and 11. Whoa, what a supernatural book. And it presents a picture that the man from Nazareth was really deity incarnate. They may be able to kill him physically, but they can't keep a good boy down. And I'm so glad that chapter 24 is coming. And I'm so glad he sits at the right hand of God, ever making intercession for the saints. Friend, the one who died is the one who's alive. I'm not sure if the Shroud of Turin's the actual cloth that wrapped him in. I could care less, but I know from this book that the one who died in Jerusalem on A.D. 30 is the one who rose again, promised that if I trust him by faith, he'll come back to get me, and that he's prepared a place for me, and that he's interceding for the Father on my behalf, and he sent the Spirit to come and live within me and make me more like himself. And if you don't know him, I invite you in his name to let him come into your life today to forgive your sins, give you real hope and joy, and be ready for that great day. Whether we close our eyes in death or whether we see the eastern skies open up, there wasn't a tomb big enough, and that boy's coming back for his own. I've enjoyed being with you. I'll see you again, same time, same place next week.